Number 30, Orlando Cepeda.
Cepeda was a prolific power hitter, one of baseball's first Puerto Rican superstars, and the second elected to the Hall of Fame. His best years were with the Giants, the Cardinals, and the Red Sox, where he was one of baseball's first designated hitters. Orlando Cepeda was 86. Last night's NHL draft had the San Jose Sharks with the first pick. Boston University center Macklin Celebrini says he's excited to be part of the Sharks' rebuild.
You kind of get to build a group. They have a young core that's very special, and I mean, I feel like they're moving in the right directions and they're building the right way. So I'm super excited to join the organization. And, I can't wait to see where we go.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Brady joining us live via phone.
I tell the guys before every game, and honestly try to do it before every practice, challenge is going to come. This team is not just going to show up and allow us to walk all over them and win. Really what matters is how are we going to respond to that. And if you can adapt and use it as a learning opportunity, it's going to set you up to go accomplish darn near anything you want to.
I think there are a lot of people that need to hear that message today.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
I'm a pretty great multitasker. I can wash dishes and do laundry.
I can roller skate while walking my dog.
I can even order lunch while doing my homework. But I can't use my phone while driving. A distracted driver is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So when it comes to driving, please, don't be a multitasker.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Wildlife advocates are filing another legal challenge to Wisconsin's wolf management plan. Mike Moan reports.
A coalition announced the appeal this week, and it centers on how the management plan came together under the state DNR. A judge dismissed the original lawsuit earlier this spring. It accused an agency panel of breaking the rules for how it interacted with special interest groups tied to hunting. Melissa Smith, with Friends of the Wisconsin Wolf and Wildlife, says by favoring certain voices, other wildlife groups are left behind.
It's quite egregious that the citizens of Wisconsin do not have any legal standing to challenge the rules in any decisions that's wildlife related.
The coalition says the judge's decision conflicts with principles under the public trust doctrine. The Department of Natural Resources says it cannot respond to pending litigation. This legal activity comes a few months after federal officials opted to keep the gray wolf on the endangered species list. State law requires a wolf hunt if the animal is delisted from federal protections, but the new management plan doesn't include a goal with specific numbers. Instead, the plan focuses on sustainability. Meanwhile, Smith says she wants state rules to be consistent.
If you look at the deer plan, our Wisconsin deer plan, it states plain as day that deer are held in the public trust. So it seems that it's pretty inconsistent when they decide something is held in the public trust and when something is not.
Hunting and farming groups contend the gray wolf population has grown too large, putting livestock at risk. But conservationists say these concerns are often overstated and that management efforts need to be rooted in science. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, a high near 72. Northwest winds, 20 to 25 miles per hour. Clear tonight, lows around 46. Sunshine with a high of 72 on your Sunday. Sunday night, clear and 50. Slight chance of showers on Monday with a high of 71.
Right now, 71 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we take a look back at what happened over the weekend and get you prepared for July 4th. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review, and my name is Jim Santel. I am your host for this very special broadcast, a series of broadcasts, actually, here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin and beyond. Delighted and honored to have you with me this weekend as we talk about the United States Supreme Court. Yes, that's right, our principal syllabus for this weekend, which I will describe in greater detail in just a moment, is all about the decisions. 10 major decisions of our United States Supreme Court just in this past week alone. We're going to talk about all of those in this hour, next hour, and then through the largesse of the leadership and the management of Civic Media, we'll be back on the air with more information for a second block of two more hours here on Amicus Law Review, talking more about these 10 cases decided by the United States Supreme Court. Our agenda, our technical description for what we're doing is just this. 2 hours here, it is Saturday, talking all about what has happened just during this past week. This is from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on this Saturday, the 29th of June. And then tomorrow afternoon, again with the supervision and management and authorization, the wonderful support of Civic Media, we're going to provide you with a special second block of two more hours of original content tomorrow, that is Sunday, June 30th, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, as we cover this broad breadth of information, all of these decisions, these important rulings issued by our United States Supreme Court just in the past several days. Once again, 2 hours of content this morning from 9 to 11, two more hours of content tomorrow afternoon from 2 to 4, inviting not only your involvement, your listening this morning, but also tomorrow afternoon as we discuss all of these major rulings that are affecting the life and the livelihood of our nation. Appreciate once again your time with me and with my wonderful producer, Max. Together, we're going to provide you with four hours of this commentary this weekend. The Supreme Court is not yet done with its work. It has indicated that in addition to the 10 major decisions that it issued just this past week, it is also going to be back in business for one final day, this coming Monday, July 1. And on that particular day, they're going to be issuing two major rulings, two cases consolidated into one ruling, one of those having to do with social media and the interaction between state governments and state legislatures, the capacity of state legislatures to determine and dictate to social media platform providers what they can and cannot do when it comes to content moderation, taking down off of the platforms things that are wildly, inappropriately offensive, and also just downright wrong, legislation coming out of two states affecting and attempting to restrict what social platform providers can and cannot do. That decision, we're still anticipating on Monday. And then there is a second, arguably the first decision that we've all been waiting for, and that is the major immunity decision. This is the claim by former president, perhaps future president, Donald Trump, that presidents, the executive of our nation, presidents are immune from criminal prosecution for acts done within the perimeter of their duties and responsibilities as described by our United States Constitution, as we have said on many times on this broadcast and on others. That is a ridiculous proposition. It is contrary to the basic tenets of our Constitution, the ways in which our government has been put together. And yet the Supreme Court has decided not only to take that case, but may in fact be telling us on Monday of this coming week that there is a category of actions, activities, events in which a president can engage that are criminal in nature, that are not subject to criminal prosecution, that indeed there are portions of the activity of a president that could be above the law. That is a stunning, stunning proposition. It was entertained very seriously by this United States Supreme Court on the last day of its oral argument in late April. We're going to hear on Monday what the Supreme Court says about that. And I tell you all of that, not only to predict with some certainty that the decisions will be rendered, will be released on Monday, but also to indicate to you that next weekend, when Amicus is back on the air, we're not only going to review those two cases, but also give you a full and complete opportunity to ask questions, raise inquiries, even make comments about the kinds of things we're going to be talking about in the 4 hours of commentary and review about the cases that the Supreme Court has decided, these 10 cases of just the past several days. Because of that, because of the importance of the content that we are discussing on this Saturday, the 29th of June, and again, tomorrow afternoon, June 30th, because of the importance of that, the significance of these cases going ahead for the future of our nation, for just these two broadcasts of Amicus, a law review, I'm going to decide to defer your questions and comments until our next weekend of shows. And so I'm asking you to do something special, not only to listen if your time periods permit, both today and also on Sunday, to take notes about those things that you note specially and that may be the subjects of your inquiries. Take those down, send those to Max and me on the Civic Media app, write those down. And I promise you, Max and I are committing that next weekend, we will take those questions about anything and everything that you have to say when it comes to these major decisions, not only those that we are reviewing, yes, indeed, today and again tomorrow here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, but also these two remaining cases the Supreme Court will be taking up and deciding, issuing on Monday, the first day of July. It is a lot in terms of our overall agenda, but as always, it is achievable here on Amicus, a law review. We appreciate, again, so much your attention to these issues, because one of the central premises, one of the principal theories and notions that I will be advocating for in these next three broadcasts, today, Sunday, and then again next weekend, is this notion that the Supreme Court in the first decades of this century, and arguably even before that, has taken on authority in so many different areas that previously were unaddressed, not a part of the general review of our Supreme Court. And we know, just even in examining the kinds of cases that we have talked about previously on this broadcast, previous shows in which you have been engaged, they have talked about and continue to talk about everything from abortion and opioids and pollution and social media, gun rights, the NRA, First Amendment issues, racial gerrymandering, voting, agency funding, ballot eligibility, the homeless and federal agencies generally, all those kinds of things on the docket of a United States Supreme Court, much also in the attention of the United States Supreme Court as it issued just late this past week a major case in which it reaffirmed its jurisdiction, its power, its review authority in all of those areas. I would offer to you, as we go through and discuss these various cases that have been decided, that will be decided in the very near future, ask yourself whether or not this was the design of our founding fathers, who identified in the Constitution as Article 1, not the Supreme Court, not the executive, but the legislature, plainly envisioning that would be the legislature, the people who we send to our Congress, our House of Representatives, our United States Senate, those people who are responsible to us, responsible to make decisions about policy and practice. Ask yourself if indeed the concept was that the Supreme Court would now be making many, if not all, of these decisions in these major areas, not just in this term, but plainly in previous terms, and already some signals about what it may do in the next 2024-2025 term. That's one of the basic premises and notions that I will be offering for you today, tomorrow, and again next week. The power of the court in the 21st century, the executive branch also a significant player in all of that, in the second article of our Constitution. Note once again, it wasn't a footnote, it wasn't an afterthought, but the judiciary, Article 3, not Article 1, not Article 2, but Article 3 of the Constitution. Wonder today if our founding fathers, our forebears, would recognize the power and authority that this Supreme Court has now taken upon itself, including statements by the Chief Justice in one of the single most important cases of our lifetime, issued just on Friday of this week, reaffirming that it is indeed the power of the court not only to state what the law is, but basically to review not only the decisions of administrative agencies, but to make decisions on these major policy questions that are now before us as a nation. We'll talk more about that in the context of one of these 10 cases that we are talking about today and also tomorrow. Other premises, other notions that are going to be implicit in our discussions are these. That is, that this Supreme Court is not at all disinclined, frankly, inclined on a routine basis to overrule precedent. Now, precedent is an important thing. This is not to indicate that we should discard and send in the rearview mirror those things that are a part of our history. We necessarily look to history and tradition to figure out where we have been so that we can be animated and thoughtful and intelligent about where we are today. This Supreme Court, again, in a number of decisions, this term and past year term, including the major decision of this term, again, arguably the most significant case having to do with the way that government operates, drop-kicking 40 years of tradition and precedent once again. We'll talk about that. An inclination, a very much strong inclination of this Supreme Court to look back and to determine that the past, while it is prologue, is also be discarded in terms of how we go forward. A reference to the past, but an inclination to overrule precedent, and they've done it repeatedly. There's also some other significant things going on in the Supreme Court these days, and that is a narrow reading of statutes. We're going to see that today and tomorrow in connection with its review of a criminal statute, also a second criminal statute having to do with the January 6th insurrectionists, the first criminal statute having to do with bribery in America, and also some pollution issues, all of them being interpreted very narrowly and not broadly by a Supreme Court that plainly does not embrace the notion of a living constitution, even living statutory authority. And that notion, that is very narrow readings of statutes in combination with other issues related to the power of this court, means that the court will be making major decisions. We also have some interesting relationships among members of the Supreme Court having to do with their affiliations across ideological lines. All of that to be a part of our discussion today, tomorrow, and again next week here on the broadcast.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
Donald Trump brags he nominated the justices who overturned Roe v. Wade, getting rid of the constitutional right to abortion.
Well, I did something that nobody thought was possible. I got rid of Roe v. Wade. For 54 years, they were trying to get Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it, and I'm proud to have done it.
Donald Trump not only took away abortion rights, he wants to monitor pregnant women and punish those who seek an abortion. Just listen.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that
There has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah.
Banning abortion, monitoring, and punishing women. That's how far Trump might go in a second term. Visit abetterwisconsintogether.org/TrumpMonitor to tell Donald Trump his views on abortion are too extreme for Wisconsin. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on Air.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name, Jim Santel. I am your host for this hour and, yes, the next hour as well, as we talk about all things Supreme Court. Once again, for those of you who are just joining us, also announcing today two broadcasts this weekend. This morning, Saturday, June 29th, and then also tomorrow afternoon, talking about these major cases because of the significance of them and our focus on these important rulings of the United States Supreme Court in this, its very busy time of the year, deferring for a while your questions and your inquiries about them until our next broadcast Saturday, asking if you would do me and Max a favor, and that is identify those questions as they come up, send them to us in the chat, send them to us on the Civic Media app, write them down, and call in, send those to us again next weekend, and we will take those on and address your inquiries and your questions as we always do here on Civic Media. We are approaching right now the beginning of four hours of discussion. Two today, two tomorrow on some of these major cases. Let me tell you what they are, and then we will jump right into an analysis of them. We're going to begin with two major cases having to do with the future of our administrative agencies. One of them is called SEC versus Jarchese, the Securities and Exchange Commission versus Jarchese. We'll talk about this major, significant, unbelievably significant case issued by the Supreme Court just this past week, having to do with the future operations of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and arguably down the road, affecting huge numbers of agencies when it comes to the ways in which they resolve issues presently before it and in the future presented to them by who? By the constituents that they serve. A significant case, SEC versus Jarchese, and then we're going to go into the big one, Loper Bright Enterprises, this major case that I would offer once again is the most significant case on the docket of the Supreme Court, certainly in this term and arguably in our lifetimes. Quite literally, on Friday, this United States Supreme Court changed the way in which we interact with government, and that government itself, through the administrative structures that have been in place for decades, changed the way in which all that work is done by civil servants doing the work of America, doing your work, doing my work, changing the ways in which there is deference, appropriate deference by judges, by courts, to the experts, the people who know what they're doing, and determining in the end that a doctrine called Chevron, C-H-E-V-R-O-N, should be rescinded. Drop kicking that precedent of over 40 years and finding that it's only courts will make important decisions about the implementation of the law. We'll talk more about that and the significance of that opinion. We're going to talk also about an air pollution case having to do with what's called a fair neighbor policy and the implications of that for the future. Also finding that the executive branch cannot, in fact, impose these regulations through the EPA to ensure that our air is clean, not only presently, but for future generations at all. Another incredible opinion by the Supreme Court in its role, making policy decisions on a regular basis. And then finally, in this period on our broadcast stations of Civic Media, we're going to talk about a case involving social media. One of two cases, the other going to be decided this coming Monday. This one finding that the administration did not, in fact, violate any amendments to the Constitution, including the First Amendment and the other amendments, and implicitly, if not explicitly, providing for communication and exchange among government entities and private entities. We'll talk more about that. A case called Murthy. All of that is on our agenda for this Saturday, June 29th. That's five cases altogether. And then in our second two-hour block of time, those are going to be tomorrow afternoon from 2 to 4. We're going to talk about the other major case involving Donald Trump. The one immunity case, that decision coming up for release this coming Monday. The Supreme Court has already issued an opinion in this case called Fisher that also involves an application and understanding of a federal statute under which hundreds of people have been prosecuted on the grounds, based upon their involvement on the grounds of the Capitol on January 6th. We're going to talk about the significance of a majority finding that that particular invocation of the statute by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia, the Department of Justice, was an error and changing now, necessarily affecting the judgments entered against those rioters on January 6th, and also arguably, now providing another basis for Donald Trump to move to dismiss two of the four counts against him in his own case involving election interference pending in the District of Columbia. That's the Fisher case. We're going to talk about abortion tomorrow. Abortion, the second case, this one coming out of Idaho, in which the Supreme Court said it had failed to properly review the case, improvidently granted, sending it back, saying we're not deciding it because we should not have taken the case in the first place. Three other cases, one involving homelessness, we're also going to discuss. We're also going to talk about a case involving opioids, the Sackler family, and the decision by the Supreme Court finding that a bankruptcy court had no capacity to resolve the claims of parties brought into the bankruptcy court under what's called a Chapter 11 proceeding, not only to reorganize Purdue Pharma, but also to extinguish the claims of other people out there. We'll talk about that case as well. And then there's yet another case coming out of the Seventh Circuit for tomorrow's discussion called Snyder. Has to do with the mayor of a city in northern Indiana and a conviction that is overturned, again, based upon the Supreme Court's interpretation of a criminal statute that it feels was improperly understood, improperly invoked, a major case circuit here of us in this Midwestern area, but also across the country. All of that, it is huge. It is a lot. I recognize that. But important to understand all of this as we go forward, not only in understanding what America is all about today, but understanding once again the role of our United States Supreme Court in 2024 and going forward. Let us begin. Let us begin with these reviews of these major cases, SEC versus Jarchese, Loper Bright Enterprises, the air pollution case, and then the social media case as well. Let's begin with the Securities and Exchange Commission versus Jarchese. The basic question here, do the historical powers of the Securities and Exchange Commission to enforce our federal financial laws, we know what the SEC does, do those basic powers that are established again for upwards of almost 80 years or so, do they violate the so-called non-delegation doctrine of the Constitution? And in fact, has the SEC been operating for all these years in a way that is not consistent with the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution? And in particular, we know now this case involving Jarchese on Thursday of this past week. The Supreme Court saying that the SEC has been doing it wrong. This agency in place for many, many years to regulate securities and ensure that the financial integrity of those enforcement actions is present and a part of their agency work. The Supreme Court determining that one of the primary ways that the SEC enforces those rules against things like security fraud and also other things in the economic area, all of that has been wrong, making it harder for not only the SEC, but also many other agencies to bring enforcement actions. The significance of this SEC case, which is one of the three that the Supreme Court has decided, in its general review of the power, the authority of agencies in America, this one finding that the SEC has overstepped its bounds and cannot be doing what it has been doing. Now, the SEC, like other regulators, other agencies out there, routinely enforces its regulations and imposes penalties using what are called in-house tribunals without juries, without federal courts. They've been doing things like this for 70 or 80 years. Chief Justice Roberts, writing for a 6-justice majority, said that the practice violated the Seventh.
This is 93.5 The Tap. CBS News Brief. The Biden campaign says forget about him dropping out of the race. Here's correspondent Nancy Cordes.
The Biden team concedes the president faltered, but they insist that Trump did himself no favors either. They say there are no conversations here at the White House or at the campaign about Biden bowing out, and they say he has every intention of appearing at the second and final presidential debate on September 10th.
Boeing Starliner crewmates Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams won't be leaving the International Space Station anytime soon. CBS's Bill Harwood says engineers are still studying problems with their spacecraft.
NASA says there's no hurry to bring the Starliner down, and it only makes sense to collect as much data as possible before they leave the station.
Boston University's Macklin Celebrini has a pretty good first job after just 1 year of college. The NHL San Jose Sharks have made him their top draft pick.
Super excited to get drafted by the Sharks and can't wait to get going.
CBS News Brief. I'm Peter King.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
A tale of two cities.
Hi,
I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the Cubs 4-2 here at AmFam Field Friday night. Are the Cubs batters simply playing too much under pressure? Manager Craig Counsell.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something we've been doing really. So their bullpen did a good job getting swing and miss.
At $213 million, the Cubs have the ninth highest payroll this year in baseball. While at $105 million, the Brewers rank 23rd. And yet, Milwaukee's in first place, the Cubs in last. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
It's encouraging that guys are just, you know, they're hungry. That's the best way I can say it. You know, they're hungry. They love playing. They love the game. They're always helping each other. We're not perfect. I mean, we're not great, but, you know, to see them help each other and see them be excited for Churio, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. As a coach, it's a beautiful thing. It gives you hope that there is still that teammate concept in baseball, you know.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, a high near 72. Northwest winds, 20 to 25 miles per hour. Clear tonight, lows around 46. Sunshine with a high of 72 on your Sunday. Sunday night, clear and 50. Slight chance of showers on Monday with a high of 71.
It's 73 at our studios.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinaire on Air with Jane Matinaire. Weekdays 10 till noon on the Talk of Eau Claire, 93.5 The Tap, and on the Civic Media app. Matinaire on Air.
It is Wisconsin. We need to have some kind of presidential debate drinking game. What is the cue?
Is it rigged? Is it?
Come on, man. Malarkey, though.
I think
malarkey is like a 5-point word.
Yeah, that's the one ring to rule them all. That is the one you want to get. I feel like he will switch some voters if he does malarkey because it's just so darn charming.
Matinaire on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Republican legislators continue to sit on $125 million that should be used right now to clean PFAS out of contaminated drinking water and groundwater across Wisconsin because they don't like the governor's line item vetoes, to which the proper legal response is, too bad. You don't have the votes. Stop being crybabies about it.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because feeling full can sound like this.
How did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
And like this.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning on Up North News Radio, Mark Jacob will join us to critique how national media did in covering the first presidential debate.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. I am your host this morning on the broadcast stations of Civic Media as we talk all about the United States Supreme Court. Lots and lots of things to talk about. So much, in fact, that through the largesse of Civic Media, we're going to be spending this morning talking about four or five of these major cases decided by our highest tribunal, and then coming back for more of this tomorrow afternoon, 2 to 4, finishing up on four or five more cases also decided just this past week by our United States Supreme Court. Beginning this process, beginning this syllabus, aggressive but achievable, talking about SEC versus Jarchese. How does this case come about? Well, George Jarchese is a hedge fund manager who's accused by the SEC of misleading investors. The SEC then brought, as it is authorized to do legislatively, it's called a civil enforcement proceeding against him before an administrative law judge. That ALJ, so to speak, is employed by the agency. And this process, once again, not only a particular to the SEC, but also a part of the operations of many, many other agencies. We'll tell you about them in just a moment or so. The administrative law judge, again, applying the rules of the SEC, not a federal trial, not a jury trial, but nonetheless getting justice done inside the administrative agency, rules against Mr. Jarchese. And after an internal appeal, also a part of the due process inside the SEC, the agency eventually orders him, Mr. Jarchese and his company, to pay a civil penalty of about $300,000. That's a lot of money. And also disgorged to give up about $685,000 in what it said were illicit gains. All of that done by the SEC as a part of the administrative process that it has been doing for the better part of the past century. Our Jarchese appeals, yes, to the Fifth Circuit. We've talked a lot about them. A divided three-judge panel. Not all of them agree on this. They rule against the agency. And they say that the particular individual here, Mr. Jarchese, had a right to face a jury trial administratively inside the agency to resolve this particular allegation against him. The agency then appealed all of this to the Supreme Court, and we get the result that we got just this past week. The Supreme Court, as I said, rejecting one of these basic tenets of how the SEC works and finding that indeed it does have to afford Mr. Jarchese and others a jury trial changing not only decades of tradition and history established by the United States Congress, but indicating along the way that that is exactly how things have to work in the future. Now, why is this so very important? Well, it's important because not only does this change the way that the SEC potentially is working in the future, but it also has an impact arguably on the same mechanisms inside many, many other agencies inside the federal government. And those agencies include things like the Federal Trade Commission, the Internal Revenue Service, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Social Security Administration, the National Labor Relations Board, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. All of these entities and others out there have applied the same process. That is an internal resolution of these cases as they go forward, as they're presented by people who have their rights adjudicated at the agency level through this process. Now, the result of this, of course, is a change not only for the SEC, but arguably as the intent and the content of this decision is known more widely as this is presented to the larger community out there of people involved with agencies. These kinds of challenges will continue to go forward, and it may well be that the Jarchese decision may in time compel all sorts of other agencies out there to do the same kind of thing. And along the way, what is this really all about? This is about a continuing attack upon our administrative structure and agencies. We have seen this a lot as we've talked before here on our broadcast about this so-called administrative or deep state. We've seen that a lot in the political environment. Now this has been and remains inside the United States Supreme Court itself. The United States Supreme Court itself, as it wrestles with the ways in which agencies do work, finding for the first time in decades that our agencies have not been doing it right, and arguably not only slowing down eventually the ways in which they adjudicate these cases, but also dramatically influencing the ways in which the substance is decided as well. Not by administrators who know what they're doing, not by ALJs who've got the authority based upon their experience and their training. We're going to bring in juries, Seventh Amendment jury trials in all these matters to resolve these cases. A dramatic change in the way that our work is done on behalf of the federal government. Now, we know that earlier in this term, the court rejected a somewhat like challenge to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the way that it was funded. 7-2 decision, citing against the agency would have opened the door there to lawsuits to nullify every regulation and every enforcement action that the CFPB had taken in its 13 years of existence. That was a significant case. And they found there that the CFPB, this agency, was properly constituted, is appropriately operating. Here, they go in the opposite direction, and they effectively find that in this particular case, the Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial is inside our administrative agencies and dramatically affects the ways in which all of this will happen going forward. Now, the Chief Justice wrote this. He said, a defendant facing a fraud suit has the right to be tried by a jury of his peers before a neutral adjudicator. Now, the decision, of course, also divides right down ideological lines. Needless to say, you've got three members of the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, all of them dissenting, accusing the majority here of a law of upending longstanding precedent. Indeed, that's exactly what does get done here. Cutting back on the authority of not just the SEC, but on administrative agencies generally. This administrative state, once again, is how American society imposes rules and how it operates in terms of ensuring that government is effective for you and me. Congress passes laws, and they broadly govern the ways in which agencies in our federal system operate. And they do things like they do bar publicly traded companies from defrauding investors, or, for example, limiting how factories may pollute the air or water, another major issue before the Supreme Court these days. And those created agencies are staffed by, are populated by experts. They know what they're doing. They're the people who are experienced. They're academics. They know what they're doing, not only in the day-to-day work that they're doing, but they also see the broad-term implications of their results. And they carry out those statutes issued by the Congress by crafting regulations and then enforcing them in a way that makes sense. It's also much more expeditious. It is effective because you are, in fact, invoking the decision-making authority of people who know what they're doing. And this concept, once again, of having administrative judges who are the experts, who do this routinely, and imposing fines and other financial punishments, other remedies inside the agencies, does not mean, as the dissent in this case shows and illustrates, does not mean you don't have a right to a jury trial. If you're still unhappy with the result of the SEC or any of these other agencies, the Social Security Administration, the EPA, the NLRB, the OSHA, all of those agencies, where can you go? You can go into federal court. That's also what the statutes say. And they contemplate, indeed, that you can get remedies through that process in the federal courts, but you don't get a jury trial in front of an administrative agency. Why? Because it's not the efficient way to do things, and it has worked effectively for 80 years. The Supreme Court, at least as to the SEC, just this past week, upsetting that longstanding tradition and finding over the dissent of Justices Sotomayor and Kagan and Jackson, over that strong dissent, which I commend your reading of, along with the majority opinion, Justices Roberts and Thomas and Alito and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Barrett all say the SEC has been doing it wrong. And it is the first of two major codifications of this past week of this attack and this attempt, successful here, to stop administrative agencies from operating in the way that is effective and meaningful on behalf of you and me. SEC versus Jarchese, a huge case, not just for the economics of securities, but also, again, in many other areas, agencies across the federal family, arguably affected by SEC versus Jarchese. This one of two opinions just this past week. I hesitate to say that it is less important than the second one, but the second one coming up here is actually also arguably, as I've indicated, the most important case decided by the United States Supreme Court in our lifetime. And that is not in any way to diminish the significant, hugely important cases the Supreme Court has wrestled with when it comes to education and civil rights and human rights and housing and voting and gerrymandering and economics and the rights of minority populations, all kinds of things out there. Hugely important. This case involving Loper Bright Enterprises, that's the name of the case, that dropkicks 40 years of tradition when it comes to the role and the relationship between federal courts and administrative agencies is the big one. And in this case, the court basically takes unto itself authority for deciding all sorts of things that previously were within the purview, within the ambit, the delegated authority of our agencies. Once again, the experts who know what they're doing, who understand the history, understand the past, and also can apply the regulations and the statutes passed by the Congress in a way that makes sense. The Supreme Court now saying that a doctrine called Chevron can no longer stand. And in fact, the agencies no longer have this capacity to make decisions absent second guessing by the federal courts. The federal courts are the ones who will no longer say that, yes, indeed, experts know that they're talking about when it comes to these cases. Now, what is Chevron deference? How do we understand that? Well, it's a principle from a Supreme Court ruling way back in 1984. Frankly, it was under the Reagan administration at that time trying to establish that indeed agencies did have the authority to do just this. The Supreme Court and other courts in many, many other cases since that time, about 70 Supreme Court decisions since 1984, roughly about 17,000 of them all together since that time in the lower courts applying this principle. And basically it says that regulatory agencies do in fact have leeway. They've got the discretion, the judgment to interpret the laws the Congress has passed, especially when they are vague, especially when they are ambiguous in some way. When Congress passes a law, it plainly cannot anticipate all the ways that the economy and the nation and the world will somehow change in the years and times ahead. And if regulators only had the powers that Congress explicitly gave them, many of those regulations would never, in fact, be implemented. They would not be affected and would not only be vulnerable to legal challenges, but would stop the very mechanisms by which our government works. The ruling today, the ruling this past week in this time of our lives, finding that the deference that has been historically given to federal agencies is no longer in place, a very significant case in our nation's history. This is also, of course, a major purpose and a major design by those people who, again, view this as an administrative state, sometimes referred to as a dark state. It does not exist. But this administrative state of cloudy people, of people out there we do not know, making decisions on our behalf, and the notion, as we have seen in the political arena, that somehow we've got to draw that back and put it in the hands of people who we know. A ridiculous notion, but nonetheless one that was adopted by the Supreme Court just this past week. And in particular, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, John Roberts, along with Justices Thomas and Alito, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, all finding that this Chevron deference, which makes our government go, can no longer stand, and that indeed it has been an inappropriate and unconstitutional, if you will, usurpation of power with respect to the various branches of government. And indeed, the Supreme Court decides in this particular case that it reaffirms, as it has often done, that it decides what the law is, and also then invokes the Administrative Procedures Act, which is also about 80 years old. The Administrative Procedures Act setting up all sorts of regulations and processes whereby agencies can, in fact, act on our behalf using those experts and using those people who know what they're doing. The Chief Justice deciding that, yes, indeed, the Supreme Court and other courts can decide what the law is, but also finding that under the Administrative Procedures Act, that they will also interpret that law. When we continue with our discussion, we're going to hear from some of the justices in particular. We're going to talk more about this hugely important case called Loper Bright Enterprises and why it is changing and has changed America for the future, as long as the United States Supreme Court continues to go down this road of attacking and diminishing the role of our agencies in our nation. Stay with
you're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Look up cheese curds. You'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, your host for this hour, next hour, and two more hours tomorrow afternoon on Sunday as we talk about these major Supreme Court cases issued by our High Court just this past week. We have talked previously about many other cases among its 62-case docket of this term, focusing now upon the decisions just issued by the Supreme Court in recent days. And again, next week, not only taking your questions and your comments on these cases, but also reviewing what the Supreme Court will do on Monday of this coming week. In this particular case, a case called Loper Bright Enterprises, the Supreme Court specifically saying in a divided 6-3 court, Chevron is overruled. That's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Courts must exercise their independent judgment, he writes, in deciding whether an agency has acted within its statutory authority. Justice Elena Kagan said the ruling amounted to a judicial power grab. A rule of judicial humility, she wrote, gives way to the rule of judicial hubris. She describes this decision as being fundamentally misguided. And she says that basically what the Supreme Court has put together here is unworkable, which is interesting because the majority's basis for overruling Chevron and taking unto itself all of these specific decisions that have previously been decided by the experts inside of agencies, all of that is premised upon an unworkability notion that the Chief Justice also articulates in his major opinion. The dissent writes, all that remains of Chevron is a decaying husk with bold pretensions. And Justice Kagan responded that Chevron was, until this past week, vibrant and valuable. She said valuable. She says it has become a part of the warp and the woof of modern government, supporting regulatory efforts of all kinds, to name a few, in the areas of keeping air and water clean, food and drugs safe, and financial markets honest. All of that, not only once again affecting in this particular case, a national fisheries agency, which is the basis upon which this particular case was ultimately decided, but also many other agencies out there as well. Let's talk more about the reasons why this is such a significant case, fundamentally altering the way that our federal government functions, transferring almost unimaginable powers from the executive branch, these agencies that are not a part of a deep administrative state, where you've got civil servants who are doing their job well, Not perfectly, from which you can appeal to a federal judge. But nonetheless, and it was a result of what's going on here in Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo, this case that alters dramatically that balance, if you will, between branches of government. The specific events here, the events that prompt this particular case, challenging a program that was enacted under the Trump administration that required the fishing industry to help cover the costs of federal compliance monitors on their boats, ensuring that those fishing entities are following environmental rules and other rules established by the fishing agencies themselves. The plaintiffs had argued that the federal law passed by the Congress, did not clearly authorize the government, this particular agency, to seek what's called this cost sharing from the fishermen. Now, the Biden administration significantly shut down this program and refunded, believe it or not, every single cent back to the industry. So there's no live controversy anymore. But nonetheless, the Supreme Court proceeded ahead, took up this case as a vehicle specifically, undeniably, to target Chevron, which again is this major 1984 decision. These agencies, once again, staffed by experts, including the Fisheries Agency, who have knowledge and they've got the experience in the areas where Congress seeks to regulate. Congress passes a broad law. The agencies, including this one in this case, then implements that by making particular decisions about specific facts before it. Plainly, the Congress cannot get involved in every single file before these agencies, nor will I offer can the courts do that. And if they do intend to become involved in this, then their caseloads across the country in federal courts and appellate courts is going to be skyrocketing. The experts understand and they execute regulations more proficiently than federal judges, who are at best understanding perhaps the issues, but not indeed experts in the area. We know in another case we're going to be talking about tomorrow, for example, that an EPA scientist, this pollution case, is not unlikely to do what Justice Gorsuch did. And again, this case we'll talk about tomorrow, confusing nitrous oxide, which is laughing gas, with nitrogen oxide, a smog-causing emission. That's the kind of error that a Supreme Court justice made in a decision just issued this past week. The agency experts don't do that kind of thing. Most agencies are staffed also with, at the heads anyway, with political appointees. The president can appoint and remove them at will. That makes them far more accountable to the citizenry than our federal judges, who are guaranteed, of course, as we know, life tenure under the Constitution of the United States, no matter how badly or inappropriately they may affect the law. Federal courts have applied Chevron, as I indicated, about 18,000 decisions in every conceivable area, as the dissenting justices note: education policy, energy, food and drug safety, labor, the environment, consumer protection, finance, health care, housing, law enforcement, all kinds of things. The list is virtually endless. And it's become the background principle against which Congress enacts all legislation. The notion, once again, that the Congress establishes broad principles and agencies apply those based upon their expertise to ensure that you and I, as we have claims with these agencies, as we have disputes with these agencies, get them resolved. That all ends now, changing dramatically the way in which our government works. Chief Justice Opinion Loper Bright declared that Chevron is unmoored to any federal law, he said, fundamentally misguided and unworkable, there's that word, creating an internal fog of uncertainty. Well, I'd offer that there's no evidence for that, and indeed the dissent calls upon the majority opinion, the majority justices, to try to explain what exactly that is. From here on out, courts must apply their independent judgment rather than deferring to federal agencies when congressional actions are ambiguous or somehow unclear. And yet the Roberts Court, as it decided this Loper Bright Enterprises case, also tried to forestall the very flood that it seemingly invited to past rulings by indicating that courts require special justification to overrule those thousands and thousands of prior decisions. Elena Kagan says that that makes a laughingstock of many of the principles out there, including stare decisis or respect for precedent. She says this: it barely tries to advance the usual factors this court invokes for overruling precedent. Its justification comes down to this: in the end, courts must have more say over regulation, over the provision of health care, the environment, safety. A long-standing precedent at the crux of administrative governance thus falls victims to the bald assertion, she writes, of judicial authority. The majority disdains restraint and grasps for power. We're going to talk more about what the dissenting justices said in this major case as Amicus, a law review, continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
.5 The Tap. Crude and Dom.
Tune in Monday for the Trump immunity ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll find out if Joe Biden's got SEAL Team 6 on speed dial.
The Devil's Advocates. Weekdays 4 till 6.
Here's to experiencing it all this summer in Wisconsin. Every deliciously cheesy, rockin', magical, fireworks-filled, festival-loving moment. There's Cheese Curd Fest in Ellsworth, Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, Festival of the Arts in Stevens Point, and the Renaissance Fair in Bristol. Honor the Earth Powwow in Hayward, Mile of Music in Appleton, Venetian Fest, Bratfest, Summerfest. So many fests for your whole crew. Find them all at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.